You're listening to Carrie Lutz's Financial Survival Network, where you get valuable information you just can't find anywhere else. To thrive in today's trying times, you need the Financial Survival Network, now more than ever. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and get your free newsletter and gift. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.
Welcome. You are listening to watching the Financial Survival Network. I'm Carrie Lutz. Well, we got a special guest for you today. You've probably been following all of the social unrest, the mass demonstrations that are taking place throughout China. And Carl Delfeld, the long history of dealing with that part of the world from your early days at the Bank of Boston, writing up companies to being being the fellow at the Center for Economic Security, chief global analyst at Cabot Wealth, so many other things, author of a new book, Rivals, Power Rivals, America and China's Superpower Struggle. And hey, wanted to get your take on what you see happening, how this is going to end up. Is Xi going to survive this? Is the CCP going to survive it?
Well, things are moving fast in China, and it's really taken over the news. I think, to get to the answer quick, I think it remains to be seen, but I think Xi Jinping is still in a very strong position. He's just been elected to a third five-year term as head of the Communist Party. He has his loyalists in the standing committee. That's the seven top officials, as well as the Politburo, which is the 24. So he really has strong support. But it's going to be interesting to see how they deal with this situation, because growth has been slowing. There's discontent among the private sector in China, which feels that they've been pushed to the background, even though they've been the engine of growth. And COVID, you know, China really made their big mistake with COVID when they didn't accept the Western vaccines. They wanted to show that they could handle it. So they used the Chinese vaccines and sent them all over Asia on a goodwill tour, but they haven't been effective. So China has been, you probably noticed, basically in a lockdown for a long, long time, and the natives are getting restless, so to speak, to use an expression. And then one of the reasons why they're in such a stringent lockdown, there's two reasons. Number one, their healthcare infrastructure is not anywhere near what it needs to be. Nothing close to what the West. So what they're really fearing is that there's widespread outbreak of COVID, and that exposes China's weakness in this regard. And then the other thing to keep in mind is we often forget that China's 1.4 billion people, and they're packed together pretty closely. Most of that population is like 20% of the country. To give you an idea, there's 160 cities in China with a population of a million or more. That's more than the rest of the world. Mm-hmm. And if you take, for example, our top four cities, New York, Chicago, Houston, LA, and then you add in, Montreal and Toronto, you're still at a total population of less than one city, Shanghai. So that's why what's going on is going on. And we'll see, I'm watching it closely, we'll see how they're dealing with it. But I think they need to relax their COVID restrictions to some degree and roll the dice a little bit.
But, you know, it is a totalitarian state.
Yes.
And any concession, any rollback of an authoritarian policy brings a lot of risk with it, because it can be perceived as weakness. And so, you know, looking at Tiananmen Square as the analog for this, they kind of have to put the rebellion down first before they can go change the policy. And then Tiananmen Square, I know there were other cities where there were demonstrations taking place, but it was nothing like it is now. Millions of people throughout the country.
Right. Well, but so far there hasn't been any violence. In other words, I think people are really leering. So, you know, you see them holding up the blank piece of paper, which I think is brilliant. And I think they know, well, we'll see if they cross that line. I think the authorities will step in. But if they can just kind of keep it nonviolent, they can cope with it. But China, keep in mind, your point about not showing weakness is true. However, the mandarins in China have shown great flexibility regarding their economy and regulatory issues. So they do take steps to let the steam out of the system from time to time. And they basically explain it with policy. It's a new policy, or it's a policy shift, or whatnot. So no question, they're monitoring it closely and are thinking of steps they can take.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, it's interesting. Excuse me. What do you think the purpose is behind the zero COVID policy? Because one of the things that they say has set the populace off was watching the World Cup, and everybody's there. It's on Chinese TV and nobody's wearing masks. Everybody's partying, having fun. And then they look around and they see, you know, hey, we're in total lockdown mode here. Right. We have been for years. Yes. There's no end in sight.
Yes.
What's the purpose?
Well, that's part of it, because, of course, the Chinese authorities, the Communist Party, is loath to admit their errors in terms of the vaccine rollout, the development, the rejecting the Western vaccines, and kind of the on and off again shutdown. It seems a bit chaotic and very contrary to the image they want to paint of themselves as very competent super managers of the Chinese economy and administrative state. So that's also part of it, is what you just said, is that people are wondering, and you see what's happening. For example, it's impacting work and economics and the livelihood of people. For example, you've seen these demonstrations at the Apple's largest production facility in China, where they make over half of their iPhones. The workers are clashing with the authorities because they want to go back to work. They want to go back to work. They need to make money to pay their mortgages and pay for food and take care of their families. So that's why it's really escalating, is that it's impacting the economic and financial security of Chinese people. And that has been the strength of the Chinese Communist Party. And with slower growth and all the things that are going on, the clampdown on semiconductors, the slowdown in investment by foreign companies, all of this is sort of like a perfect storm for the Communist Party.
So it would appear. So the CCP, can it survive in its current state, or is it going to have to somehow pivot, try to reform, and try to project a friendlier, warmer, fuzzier image?
Well, I don't think so, because I think the one thing, what people sometimes don't realize, it's, and we forgot, many in the West, in the United States, you know, over the years where we tried to cultivate cooperation, and that China would become a democratic state or pluralistic, and we could be partners in some way. What they forgot is that China, from the get-go, has been a communist state. And the number one goal of the Communist Party is the preservation of the Communist Party. Mm-hmm. They look at what happened with the Soviet Union under Gorbachev and then Yeltsin, basically the meltdown and the dissolution of the Soviet Union. They learned some very hard lessons from that. So that's why I don't have expectations they would loosen their grip. I think it would tighten, much higher probability that they will tighten rather than loosen in the near term. But you know, they're going to have to deal with that situation sooner rather than later.
Yeah, I would think. And it's definitely an interesting situation. And you do have the situation where their economy is hurting in large measure due to these ceaseless lockdowns. And yes, their kind of deal with the public was, you know, give up your political freedoms and we'll give you economic prosperity and everyone will be happy. But right. that deal seems to be falling through now.
Right. Well, one thing I think they might do, and Xi Jinping, you know, he's been in charge, say, roughly 10 years. And there definitely has been a shift, although a lot of the trends are pretty consistent, 80s, 90s, you know, 2000, 2010, and so on. But I would say Xi Jinping has clamped down a bit on the private sector. So one thing that I think would be smart for them to do is to sort of lighten the regulatory touch, open capital, the spigots of capital to the private sector, give them a little bit more room to maneuver, because that could be the spark that gets the economy back into gear a little bit and gets them, you know, to the 5-6% growth rate that they really need to highlight the fact that they're managing the economy well. Because when you really think about it, you know, this might surprise you, but there's something called the Fortune Global 500,
right,
which is the largest 500 companies in the world ranked by revenue, total revenue. Mm-hmm. Well, in 2000, Chinese were almost a blip on that screen. But last year, they led it, 135 firms to 122 for America. But of that 135 companies that Chinese have on the list, 75% are state-owned firms. So if they could make these very big, you know, companies more profitable, more agile, more productive, that could really be a shot in the arm of that economy. And it's not going to happen overnight, but that's something, some powder they have, dry powder they have in reserve, that I would think they would do that rather than some other measures that might. And they can do it, by the way, without losing control of the country, because as you know, all these state-owned companies are basically have cells from the Chinese Communist Party inside of these administrative companies, these behemoths, these giants.
Right.
So they could do both at the same time, strengthen the Chinese Communist Party and strengthen the Chinese economy.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I think we're in for an interesting time. What yes. about the concept that they're going to invade Taiwan? How real is that?
Don't just survive, thrive. The Financial Survival Network.
Fury Gold Mines is a Canada-focused exploration and development company committed to aggressively growing its scalable high-grade gold assets with major drill campaigns planned across its 3.5 million ounce portfolio. Fury is led by a management team of proven explorers and developers with a track record of success in advancing and financing project development. Fury Gold Mines is well positioned to create value for investors with low-risk development growth and the potential for a new major discovery. Fury Gold Mines trades on the TSX and NYSE American under the ticker FURY. To learn more, go to furygoldmines.com. That's furygoldmines.com.
This is the Financial Survival Network, the information you need to thrive now more than ever.
I think it's quite real. I think if I was going to try out my crystal ball, I would say it would be in probably 2024, 2025. And I think everything that's going on makes it more likely than less likely, because as you know, they're reuniting Taiwan with the mother country is probably the number one priority, big priority of the Chinese Communist Party. They've been waiting a long time. Their leadership is getting older and older, including Xi Jinping. And for him to be able to return Taiwan to China, mainland China, would be quite a feather in his cap and a lasting legacy. So in 2425, why do I say 2425? Because it's around that time. Well, first of all, there's going to be a presidential election in Taiwan.
Right.
So they might be able to maneuver some parties or some individuals to call for independence, which they could use as a trigger for taking action. That's number one. And 2425 is when a lot of these arms sales to Taiwan might, you know, be arriving and be in process of being put in place. So if they wait to all this new equipment and military firepower is put into place in Taiwan, it will make their procedure to take over Taiwan. And by the way, we'll talk about it. I don't expect them to have a full-scale military invasion. Mm-hmm. That's not my expectations. And then the other thing is Japan is also beefing up their military spending, and that will be in place around that timetable. So the U.S., of course, will be in the middle of an election, and who knows how that's going to work out or what issues will be. So that would be my guess when they might move. But I would think they would move more with a blockade, cutting the cables, the submarine cables. So cutting off the internet, cutting power, cyber attacks, more that sort of strategy than a military invasion.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that could be interesting, and maybe it requires maybe a finesse that we haven't seen them demonstrate yet.
Yes.
Okay, so as far as the economic front, though, definitely cause for concern there, isn't it?
From our point of view, the Taiwan situation?
Yeah, well, as far as China goes, their economics, and then, you know, if they march into Taiwan, what are they really going to get out of it, right?
Yeah, well, I think their goal with Taiwan, the issue with Taiwan, of course, if China moves on Taiwan in a non-super aggressive way, it mm-hmm. makes it more difficult for the U.S. and its allies, Japan, Australia, the Philippines, and so on, to react forcefully. Because, well, first of all, it would take time to mobilize. And number two, we'd have to try to break up the blockade, which would be quite difficult. Mm-hmm. So it would be a huge blow to U.S. and Western credibility in Asia, because Taiwan is the cork in the bottle, so to speak. It would open up the second and third island chain to China. And, you know, their naval fleet now is larger than ours and growing at a much faster rate because of lower cost. You know, their military spending is now 5 times that of Japan, 25 times that of Taiwan. Mm-hmm. So even though it looks like a smaller number, the 350 to 400 billion, which is about half of ours, they get a lot more for their money. And so they're definitely, each year, we're losing ground.
Yeah.
And then Ukraine doesn't help matters, right? Because now we're distracted and our resources are spread all over the world. Whereas for China, Taiwan is a home game.
Right. Well,
it's an away game for us, 6,000 miles from California.
Yeah, it's true. But a couple thousand from Guam and Hawaii.
Yeah, 1,700 miles from Guam.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So as far as like what's happened with Ukraine, with Russia's apparent humiliation there, do you right. think that's slowed down the Chinese timetable for taking Taiwan?
I don't think so, but it's a factor they're going to take into consideration. I think the Ukraine situation for China cuts both ways, because the Russia-Chinese partnership, the de facto alliance, is still in place, but the mistake that Putin and Russia made with Ukraine and the humiliation, so to speak, has definitely weakened Putin and Russia in China's eyes. So they are already a junior partner. I mean, the Russian economy is roughly 10% of China. So it was already a junior partner. But its two assets, of course, are energy, some other resources, agricultural resources specifically, and then its nuclear arsenal. So China's leverage over Russia was already very large, but now it's almost total. And Russia's going to rely on China to help it get through this period. We don't know how long this is going to last. But on the negative side, I believe that China's real goal, a lot of people say they want to dominate Asia. My view in my book, Power Rivals, is that they want to dominate Eurasia. So they want to dominate Asia, and then through the Soviet Union, I mean Russia, I should say, and into Europe. Because Europe, before Ukraine, was really very much on the fence
yeah.
between the U.S. and China. You know, they do Germany, France, all the EU in general does huge amounts of trade with China. And so they were sort of like on the fence, you know, trying to keep the U.S. security alliance and NATO in place, but still keep open trade and investment with China. And Ukraine has sort of blown that up a bit, at least near term, although I think the U.S. and NATO are going to have some problems as time goes on. If the Ukraine situation just drags on and on and on, there's going to be some big fights about who's supporting Ukraine, who's, you know, giving them money and arms, and who's going to reconstruct Ukraine when this is all over. And the bill is going to be humongous. It's going to be at least $500 billion, probably more than $1 trillion to rebuild Ukraine.
Mm-hmm. Yep. It's going to be big money, right?
Right. Big fight. It's going to be a big fight.
A lot of issues coming. So when you look 10 years down the road, what's your expectation for what we're going to see?
Well, 10 years down the road, or let's just call it 2030, you know, I call this decade the decisive decade, because the U.S. Has many advantages, but both the U.S. and China share some strengths and some vulnerabilities. So I think basically this U.S.-China rivalry this decade, I think China cannot beat us. We can only beat ourselves.
Right.
And so if we take the right actions and we preserve what I call the U.S. brand is dynamic stability, we, you know, if you look back over the last couple hundred years, what's made America a superpower? It's that we're a dynamic economy and a stable society and a stable political system. So we've got to preserve that. And we don't need to go into politics, but we can see that that's fraying a little bit, because China looks at us, and I know how they think about the United States. They think we're distracted,
declining,
divided, and in decline.
Yeah.
And in decline. Now, mm-hmm. China has its vulnerabilities. I mean, even before the slowdown in the economy, you know, where they went from 10% growth now and then the 5 to 6 to 7%, and now, but I'd be careful of judging China too harshly right now in the middle of COVID, because in 2 or 3 years, this could be in their rear mirror and they could be back off to the races in terms of their economy. So I wouldn't, my point is, it all depends on how the U.S. is able to blunt their strengths and then to take advantage of their vulnerabilities. And China's going to try to do the same thing. So that's why it's like a chessboard. It's a global chessboard. And from rare earths and rare metals to semiconductors to cyber, it's going to be a fascinating, if I could call it a game or great game to watch, but it's also very dangerous. And a U.S. has to be careful not to overreact, and to keep in mind that a weak China is just as dangerous as a strong China.
Right. Yeah, we can see that. Cornered animal, you know,
right.
Most dangerous.
Right.
So you think that the CCP will survive what's happening now with the mass demonstrations then?
I do believe that, yes.
Okay, well, hey, it's going to be interesting to find out. It's going to be interesting to see what they decide to do, because it's going to require some backtracking, no question. So, hey, in any event, everybody out there, you should check out Carl's book, Power Rivals, America and China's Superpower Struggle. This is from somebody who's been there, who's done that, and knows what's going on there. If you got a question for Carl, myself, shoot me an email, kl@carrylutz.com. Don't forget to sign up for your free newsletter at financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Carl, thanks for stopping by. Really enlightening.
Thank you. Good to be with you.
Thanks for listening to Carrie Lutz's Financial Survival Network, your solution to today's trying times. For the latest, go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.